Dan Berkley. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We take it to Washington, D.C. today here on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And greeting that at the Supreme Court was the entire Right to Life movement. By the way, they're going to be out in the Bay Area. We're going to hear about that in a little bit. But there were protests and counter-protests, and the battle for safe, legal abortions and for the proper health care for women continues apace. We don't have to remind you the kinds of things that were being said by folks. Republicans happened to be in the last election, but these folks are still around, and it is incredibly difficult for a poor working class woman to get an abortion and to be able to afford it and to get there and to not be afraid in the face of still 40 years since Roe v. Wade has passed. Joining us to talk about this is Sonsara Taylor. She's with Stop Patriarch Now, stoppatriarchy.org. That's where they're located on the web. Well, you just came from a protest. Tell us about what's going on in Washington.
We've been down in Washington, D.C. for a couple of days now. We're doing a week of action. StopPatriarchy.org is doing a week of action on both coasts to stand up for abortion rights and to defeat the war on women. And today we spent several hours in the freezing cold at the Supreme Court, and we'll be going back there shortly again to raise the banner of abortion on demand and without apology. Because 40 years after Roe versus Wade, as you were just speaking to, abortion is more dangerous to provide, more difficult to access, and more stigmatized than it has been at any point in the last 40 years. And anybody who thinks that this right is safe, or that it's safe because there's a Democrat in the White House, this is not true. Abortion needs to be fought for, and it needs to be destigmatized. 1 in 3 women will have an abortion. We need to tell our stories. There's nothing wrong with this, because fetuses are not babies, and abortion is not murder, therefore. And women are human beings. We're not incubators. So we need to talk about the abortions that we've had. We did that at the Supreme Court. We also need to honor and defend the courageous doctors and providers who risk their lives every day to provide women with this service. So we were there also honoring the abortion providers. Dr. George Tiller, who was the most recent abortion doctor who was assassinated. We had his pictures. We had quotes and essays and statements from other abortion doctors around the country saying why they do their service, what it means to women. We were heralding their service, and we were really trying to send a message. Obviously, we were countering the lies of the so-called pro-life movement, but most fundamentally, we were trying to send a message to the people of this country, the overwhelming majority of whom do not want to see women forced to have children against their will, but most of whom are inactive and under the illusion that this right is safe. We were there to send a message that we will only defend the right to abortion. We will only ensure a future for women and girls that is anything other than enslavement and forced motherhood if we stand up and fight right now and turn this tide. And that's what we were trying to plant a pole and be an example of. StopPatriarchy.org is building a movement across the country to actually get back out in the streets and stop relying on the Democrats to supposedly save the rights of women and actually fight for them the only way they can be won, relying on ourselves, being uncompromising and unapologetic and declaring abortion on demand without apology.
I guess you took note during the ceremonies yesterday where the president took the oath again, who gave the closing prayer. Was that of concern to you? You want to tell people?
This was at the Democratic National Convention. I was making the point. This was not yesterday at the inauguration, but at the Democratic National Convention, it really is an exposure of the position of the Democratic Party and of Obama himself. As much as they proclaim to be the party of choice, of women, Obama made a special effort to invite Archbishop Timothy Dolan, who is the Archbishop, Catholic Archbishop, who spearheaded the recent rebellion over birth control coverage. He had been invited to give the closing prayer at the Democratic National Convention, and that just kind of shows you that this is a pattern with the Democrats, where they continually seek common ground with Christian fascists. They seek common ground with those who want to criminalize abortion. They seek common ground with those who want to ban birth control. This is not a party that can be relied on. They're not the friends of women.
Talk a little bit in real terms, in terms of poor women and working class woman. How hard is it really? Can you talk a little bit about some of the stories you hear in this struggle so that people can keep a human face on this battle?
I think this is an extremely important question, and especially, you know, in a lot of places that have Pacifica Radio, in the Bay Area, in places like New York, where I'm from, you know, people can have a distorted sense of how accessible the right to abortion is. It's difficult for a lot of women in the urban areas to get an abortion, but it's a lot easier than other places, so we can have a distorted sense. The reality is, in the rural parts of the U.S., once you leave the urban areas, 97% of counties, 97% do not have an abortion provider. Many, many places, you have to travel hundreds of miles to get an abortion. You have to, not only that, in many places, you have to travel hundreds of miles and get a place to stay overnight. You have to save up the money not only for an abortion, but for travel, most frequently for child care. 60% of women who get abortions already have children. You need child care. You need housing overnight because you have to see the doctor one day, wait 24 hours before you can get your procedure, and then go back home. This puts abortion care outside of the financial possibilities of very many women. And at this point, the best estimates that exist, both from doctors and from those who do the research and track abortion, 30% of low-income women, 30% of women who are on Medicaid or would qualify for Medicaid, even after they actively seek an abortion, cannot afford one and end up with a child that they did not want. This is directly tied to the Hyde Amendment, and this is another thing that the Democrats help approve every single year, the Hyde Amendment, which denies any federal funding to abortion care services, the only medical procedure that's specifically banned by government coverage, federal coverage. And so people need to understand, and I haven't even delineated the parental consent laws, the intrusive, medically unnecessary vaginal probes, vaginal ultrasounds that are mandated in places like Texas. There's so many restrictions that have no medical basis. They have no basis in science. There's so many restrictions on women's ability to have an abortion and to even access it. So right now already in this country, Roe v. Wade means very little to real women's lives in many, many places. And then I have to say on top of that, because there's been such a craven capitulation to the anti-abortion rhetoric, to the so-called pro-life movement, by the Democrats and then by a lot of the so-called pro-choice movement in their wake, that there's been such utter defensiveness. I mean, even the word pro-choice, it reflects a refusal on the part of these organizations to say the word abortion. And now an organization like Planned Parenthood has decided on the 40th anniversary they're going to drop the label pro-choice because even that they find too divisive. So there's been such a capitulation among most of the pro-choice movement that the idea that abortion is okay, they won't even say that, that you have a whole, I was going to say a whole generation, but actually you have several generations now that have never heard anybody talk about abortion as something that is positive, that's liberating for women, that's a moral decision for women to make, which it is. Abortion is, for most women who get an abortion, it's an extremely responsible decision to make. It's the most responsible decision to make, and it has to do with her taking charge over her life and her reproduction and her childbearing decisions, and that's a positive thing for women. It's a positive thing for society, and we need to say this. So on top of the restricted access, the point I'm trying to get at is that there's a huge amount of stigma, and there's a huge amount of shame that surrounds and stalks women who get this service. So for a lot of women, they can't even get an abortion. And for those who do, there's a guilt that is imposed on them and a shame that is imposed on them that has no legitimacy. And it actually is a crushing force in many women's lives, and it shouldn't be. And with that, too, we have to fight to lift. This is why women have to talk about their abortions very openly and unapologetically. And they need to say the word and talk about it openly and unapologetically and change the moral atmosphere around this question. So I feel like we're fighting both the access and the stigma, and then there's the actual danger to providers and the danger to the staff workers, which is very real and with us every day at the clinic doors across this country where doctors are hounded every day on their way into the clinic.
You're there in Washington, D.C. today. You were protesting. You're going to be going back to the Supreme Court. There were very strident anti-abortion activists there. They have never dropped the ball, have they?
No, they haven't. And these people should understand. Because there's only ever been one motivation for the anti-abortion movement. There's really only ever been one motivation from its inception and at its core, and that is that they're upset with women choosing not to have children and not to be subordinate to their husbands and subordinate to their understanding of God.
And choosing not to have children and also choosing when to have children.
That's true, choosing when to have children, but especially the idea that women would want to be something besides mothers. Which, look, parenting is a beautiful thing when you want to be. But the idea that the most important thing a woman will ever do in her duty is to bear children, that idea is a dark ages idea. That idea, we had a women's liberation movement and upsurges around the world to shatter that idea. And they are really very, very deeply committed to reimposing not only that moral idea, but the codification of that idea.
And also birth control comes into this as well. We're not just talking...
Exactly.
In other words...
Exactly.
You're going back to the Supreme Court today. What other actions are planned? What kinds of things are planned so that you can engage and enlist, if you will, working women who have suffered, who might want some help, who want to know a little bit more, who might want to get active in this regard?
There's a role and a need and an ability for everybody to play a role in this movement to defeat the war on women and to stop patriarchy. One of the things that we're doing this week is we are going out to the college campuses tomorrow and Thursday, and we're doing mass outreach. We're bringing our banners, Abortion on Demand Without Apology. We're starting the conversation with people. We're challenging them to confront how endangered this right is and to join in the movement to defend it. We are going to be defending one of the abortion clinics in the city that's going to be protested this week while the anti-abortion forces are here. And we're going to be confronting politically the March for Life, both here in D.C. and in San Francisco. In San Francisco, it's on Saturday the 26th. I believe people will be out at noon. You can find information for that as well at stoppatriarchy.org. Part of why we're going to the college campuses, and I think the same thing applies beyond in oppressed communities, working class communities, is that there's a lot of people who support this right who don't know that they need to speak up. They don't actually know it's endangered. And two, there's a lot of people, we've encountered this quite a bit recently as we've built for this, who right now would associate themselves with the anti-abortion cause, who've never heard an argument made for the other side. And we've actually met people, including some of our volunteers who are here this week with us in D.C., are people that we met about a month ago, who, when we met them, they were vehemently opposed to abortion, and we were arguing it out with them, and one of them was a young woman who said, "My God, I've never heard anybody talk about it this way." Turns out she had two sisters. One of them had an abortion when she was a teenager, and one of them had a baby when she was a teenager, and she started walking through what happened to each of their lives and how much more positive it was for the sister to be able to delay childbearing. And we talked to another young man who sat down in one of our discussions, and it was at a Revolution Books in New York, and he talked for a while, he listened for a while, and about 30 minutes into the discussion, he said, "Wow, when I was 19, I got my girlfriend pregnant, and we got an abortion, and I felt horrible about it ever since." He said, "This is the first time I didn't feel like I was part of killing a child." And he just never heard anybody break down the science. For the fetus, yes, it has the potential to be a human being, but it's not a human being. It's a subordinate part of a woman's body until it's born. It's not a separate social being. It's not a separate biological being. It's part of her. And so we were talking about these things, and people's minds can be changed. And I think it's very important. This is why people should tell their stories of abortion. They should come out with us when we do broad outreach. You should get involved, write your story in, or connect through stoppatriarchy.org. And then we are building for International Women's Day this year, March 8th, around the country, which is an international holiday. It's a revolutionary holiday for women to rise up and to break the chains that hold women back, but to also unleash their fury as a mighty force for revolution. And men need to be a part of that as well. And so this March 8th, a big part of what we're building for through these weeks of action around abortion is massive nationwide protests on International Women's Day to stand up against the global epidemic of rape, the global assault on women's right to abortion and reproductive rights, the global trade in women as sex slaves, all of the forms of enslavement and degradation, of disrespect and violence against women, which really stalk women from one corner of the globe to the other. We're saying they're not separate issues. They are all connected, and we need to build a movement to fight the power and transform the people for revolution against all of this. And so this is a big thing that we're looking towards, and people, you can get involved at stoppatriarchy.org. You can learn more. You can send in your stories, and you can find a way. If what you want to do is order the, we have palm cards, hand them out, or leave them in the laundromat because you don't want to talk to people about this yet, that's an important way to get this movement seen and to grow it and to spread the word. If you want to come to a protest and speak out, we need your voice there. If you want to come to a program and a discussion and learn more about this, there's a place for you. So everybody has a way to connect. And really nobody who's heard this program has any excuse for something, because the truth is that the future of women is depending on what we do right now. There is vicious forces of patriarchy.
If I could just interrupt, because we're running out of time, but it was made very clear during the last presidential election, despite the extraordinary, you know, God's pro-rape and women can't get pregnant if they're raped. Even with that kind of commentary, these guys were not run out of the party. So they may not be Democrats, but it is deeply part of the mainstream. This
is really important. Bob Avakian, who's the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, has made the point a few times, a very good point, that if half of your political spectrum, if half of what's supposedly legitimate politics, you know, what's legitimate politics in the U.S. is the Democrats and the Republicans, if half of that includes openly rabid racist Christian fascists and supporters and defenders of forced motherhood by rape, if that's half of your spectrum that's supposedly legitimate, then your whole framework is illegitimate. And I think, you know, the fact that the Republicans who said these things weren't run out of office is an indictment. And the fact that the Democrats treat them as legitimate is also an indictment. And the other thing I have to add very quickly is that Murdoch, who is one of these people who said that being impregnated by a rape was a gift from God, there was a big celebration among those who support the Democrats that he was not reelected and a Democrat replaced him. But the Democrat who replaced him was anti-abortion. And this just shows you how far to the right the whole political spectrum has moved, and why we need to build this movement from below and in opposition to official politics, in reality and in line with what women really need for true liberation.
All right. Well, we got you at stoppatriarchy.org. You're going back to the Supreme Court for Encounter 2 with the Right to Lifers. We wish you the best of luck. Very important story for us. We'll be on it. Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints.
Okay. Thanks so much, Dennis.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
My name is Alex Petersburg, and I'm with Stop Patriarchy Bay Area, which is the Bay Area chapter of the National Initiative to End Pornography and Patriarchy, the Enslavement and Degradation of Women. Today, we were at City Hall trying to build mass resistance in San Francisco, trying to build mass resistance against the Walk for Life West Coast that's coming to San Francisco this Saturday. What this Walk for Life represents is a bolstered anti-abortion movement with vicious and dehumanizing ideas about women, with the objective of redefining life on the federal level so that a fetus, the potential life of a fetus, is legally considered and enforced as more important than a woman's life. They mobilize about 50,000 people to come march down Market Street. And January 26th, this Saturday, it will be the ninth time that they do this. This week, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. So we had a press conference today on the steps of City Hall in San Francisco where women were in chains, because that really is what this whole movement represents, is backed by the state as part of this whole culture of the domination of women by men, legally and illegally. These women were in chains with a sign behind them that said, "We won't go back," which is one of our main slogans that we're taking out this Saturday. And we read a statement about this whole global war on women, what it's going to take to end it, and ended with the women casting off the chains. So I just want to say what I mean by the war on women is we have a global capitalist culture that's really objectively disgusting and degrading to women. And we can see this evidence of this in the way that rape is upheld as sort of like a fun pastime. If we look at recent events like what happened in New Delhi, India, what happened in Steubenville, Ohio, where just sort of part of a party night for men is to strip, torture, urinate on, humiliate, impale, and rape women and then discard them like so much garbage. You see this promoted and celebrated in a multi-billion dollar porn industry that is largely just normalized, as, you know, people are led to think this is just the way that things are. This is just sort of, you know, some aspect of the way that men are and what men want to see. None of this is true. This is the way that men's minds are shaped by the system that not only creates a culture of rape, but encourages the type of legislation that would force women into motherhood and take away their ability to make decisions that affect the entire rest of their lives, their futures, their relationships, the way that they see themselves. We see in this culture, like, a lot of victim blaming. When a woman is pregnant and needs an abortion, she's selfish or irresponsible. When a woman is raped, what was she wearing? Why was she out that late? This is, you know, an objectively repulsive culture that we're up against. And so what we want to do is we want to raise that disgust against the putrid dominant culture that encourages the domination of women by men and enforces it by state power a lot of the time. The anti-abortion movement is a huge concentration of this, and we want to make sure that it's not business as usual for them this Saturday, that they meet some real opposition and people have a chance to resist directly.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I mean, I'm somebody who wrote a book about Henry Hyde, and to faced off eye to eye with people like Joseph Scheidler. I was on his website in the crosshairs, and I know how these folks operate. I am amazed, I have to say, that here in the Bay Area, when there is supposedly, you know, produced the first woman speaker of the House, that you're bracing for an anti-abortion protest of between, what, 30 and 50,000? That's what it was last year? Is that right? Is that shocking? Should I be shocked on that?
You shouldn't be shocked, because there's one main point I want to speak to when it comes to the pro-choice movement, what has become of the pro-choice movement. There are a lot of people in the Bay Area that don't believe that abortion should be illegal, don't believe that it should be restricted, as it is increasingly restricted, regardless of its legality. But there is sort of a overall sense that the right to abortion is safe because it's legal, because there's a Democrat as president. What the Democrats consistently do is they point to the extreme poll set by the right wing. They say, vote for us. What are you going to do? Vote for them? All your rights will be taken away. And in this way, they garnish support. And yet, once they're in power, you see this pattern of, you know, what does it mean to reach across the aisle? What does it mean to find common ground with right-wing fascists? It means that the legislation moves further and further to the right. And then in the meantime, people do have sort of a false sense of safety. A lot of these restrictions are happening on the state level. People are not necessarily, especially in California, aware how pervasive this is happening, you know, state by state by state.
You can't get an abortion, essentially, and particularly if you're poor working class.
That's right. 87% of rural counties in the U.S. don't have access to an abortion clinic. And, you know, Democracy Now! Recently released a study of criminalizing pregnancy just a couple of days ago. They're talking about what the March for Life is trying to do on a federal level has already happened in several states, which is this personhood idea and defining a fetus as a separate human being, imprisoning women for child endangerment, for doing things like driving, you know, half under the legal limit for alcohol, 4 months pregnant. 4 months pregnant, you're endangering a child, and that woman is put in prison. Forcing women to have C-sections. A woman died. She was sick, and they thought, we got to save the fetus. And they cut her open, and they killed her. And this is what's happening around the country, and this is what needs mass resistance to defeat.
Well, let me ask you before you go, and I really appreciate you coming in. If people want more information about the march, about the work that you're doing now, what's the best way to do that?
Look, it's essential that people come this Saturday. We're going to be at Justin Herman Plaza at 10 o'clock in the morning. We're going to be at UN Plaza rallying up at 12 p.m. If you miss either of those times, you know, it's the participation of as many people as possible is what it's going to take, right? And so we're going to really be resisting this movement at Powell and Market at 1 o'clock p.m. Anybody who cares, right, that this woman-hating agenda be brought to an end needs to be at Powell and Market this Saturday at 1 p.m. If you want to find out more about this initiative, our website is stoppatriarchy.org.